Lalita Narona, welcome and congratulations on this beautiful new collection of poetry, Her Skin Philo Thin.
Thank you so much.
I thought we would start with the title, Her Skin Philo Thin. This is taken from a line in one of your poems in this collection. Whose skin and what's behind this analogy?
Well, the title of the work, Her Skin Philo Thin, refers to my mother. She first came to America at the age of 59. To take care of her first grandchild, and that's my son, so that I could go right back to work. And she was 86 when she died in India. So watching her grow old slowly over the years was difficult because the distance between our continents made frequent visits impossible, essentially. So we were always aware that any time we met, any meeting could well be the last one. So this book is dedicated to my brothers and my sisters and in honor of our mother. The title, of course, Philo Thin, is the way she seemed to look each time I saw her.
To that end, I wonder if you might maybe start us off by reading your poem, Mother's Stories.
Yes, my mom was a great storyteller, so. Mother's Stories. The monsoons cried for days when as a child you told me stories. Family histories of who was who and how they came and went and whose ancestral flesh we were. The boy, a priest, your cousin, who fell in love and lost his girl, his mind, his faith too, who spent his days wandering streets in search of what he never knew. The woman, his mother, who lost her way one moonless night and stepped into an open well without a sound, found when that fiery ball shone upon her afloat. The little girl, your aunt, who played upon a pile of wood and bitten by a snake, fell asleep. The wood your father's father used to go ahead and build the house he meant to build. His child's face on every wall. You have told me stories, round and round in rings of years, your words have taken root. Bloomed into a story tree, which I now must tell, now that I've been called to speak your name.
Lalita Narona, reading from her poetry collection, Her Skin Philo Thin, the poem we just heard titled My Mother's Stories. And I listen to you read that poem, and I'm reminded of, you ever hear that old story about Ernest Hemingway and the challenge to write an entire story in 6 words. This is a series of stories that are each told in 6 lines.
Yes.
I mean, so many generations, cousins, family members, and each 6 lines tells a life story. It's epic in a way.
Thank you. Yes, we heard these stories over and over again, my mom's relatives.
Tell me more about your childhood and that place that made you who you are to a degree.
Well, I grew up in small towns in India along the West Coast. And so at the time when there was no radio and there was certainly no television. And my first home was a home with no electricity or no plumbing or none of that. So we would sit around in the evenings and tell stories. And my mother just loved to tell about her past, which has now been immortalized because I got her to write everything down for me at some point. So it was a very simple life that we had, and we sort of had to create our own amusement, I think.
Fast forward me to the story of when you left India to come to the U.S. What was that moment like for you, and what was it like, I wonder, for your mother to see you go?
I always wanted to come to America because, quite honestly, I didn't like being poor. And the only way I could see was a way for me to get out of India and do well for myself and then be able to elevate my family financially as well. So I had to wait until I was old enough to apply to the United States Information Service to get a Fulbright travel grant that would pay for my way to come here. I did not tell my parents that I was doing this when I was trying for it because I didn't know whether they would like it or not. My dad, although he had got his PhD in Scotland and he had gone away and done his doctorate and so on when I was 6 months old, and he didn't come back till I was 4 years old. So...
And you were of college age at this point then?
Yeah, so in India, we finished high school at age 15. So, yeah, I'd finished college and had finished my master's even in genetics. And it was, you know, not so much my mother, but my father was a very stoic sort of man. I was the oldest, and he held me to very high standards, because if I didn't make it, no one was going to make it. But the only time I ever saw him cry is on that night before I left, because I got the scholarship so suddenly that I couldn't even go home to say goodbye. My parents lived 300 miles away, and my brothers and sisters, their home was 300 miles away from Bombay. So they all came to Bombay to say goodbye to me, and we were in a small little flat there, and my dad, my mom, we were all sleeping on the floor, and whoever, you know, someone was on the bed and so on. And my dad and I were lying side by side, and suddenly in the night I heard the sound, and I felt like his shoulders were shaking, and I thought, it just shocked me. I had never seen my father cry before, not even when we lost our sister. So I think, and I have that, a letter he wrote to me when I first left.
So. What did he say to you in that letter?
He said how proud he was of me. It was several months after I'd come to the U.S. and he hadn't yet written to me, but that was his first letter. And just basically saying how he felt, because he knew what I was in for, leaving home and not knowing anyone, and that I would see hard days, and that I should always be able to move forward and to have faith in myself and confidence and so on. But he didn't say any of these things to me. He never could.
He wrote them in a letter.
He did in a letter, yes.
So you came here, as you say, as a student on a Fulbright travel grant. You became an accomplished scientist. You have a PhD in microbiology. You've raised a family of your own since then. You're a published fiction writer and a poet. But then at the same time, you've still got inside you this memory of being a young, new immigrant to this country with all the complicated emotions that go with that. And I wonder if you might read next your poem, 40 Years Later, What I Know.
Yes, certainly. 40 Years Later, What I Know. Let me say this about immigrants who burrow through the earth to swim in rivers whose names they lisp. Mississippi, Missouri, so many S's, hisses, misses, the Grand Canyon they fly over with paper wings. I love the way they step off a plane or boat into a silky twilight, towing belongings, prayer beads, bamboo flutes, jute bags, scraps of this and that, passports and photographs, leaving behind scorched chimneys, banana leaves, monkeys hanging by their feet from trees. But here is what they do not say. We will never be whole again. We cannot in truth uproot. We will grow fins, wings, scales, tails, watercolored third eyes. We will use our arms as legs, heels as fists, bellies and backs as floats. We will fill our mouths with ash. We will chill our teeth, drink the acrid wine of separation, and sleep through occasions, birth, death, days between, for this one chance to awaken, grateful, still surprised.
Lalita Narona reading her poem, 40 Years Later, What I Know, from her book, Her Skin, Philo Thin. These poems, it seems to me, show an enhanced sense of our place, like in a larger ancestral timeline, you know, almost like you can zoom out and see your particular familial spot on an almost geological time span, you know? And I get the feeling maybe your science background has a way of perhaps creeping into these poems as well.
Yes, absolutely, yes. People often ask me, although my careers have been spatially separated, namely I was a scientist for many years and then I became a writer, I don't think I was ever one without the other. I took the science pathway because that was my way to the United States. It was my ticket. Having said that, I absolutely loved science. But I was always, all my friends were from the English department in college, and I read whatever they read, and I just absolutely loved literature. So when I became a teacher, I got my chance.
I wonder if you might read us your poem, Across Bones.
Yes, certainly. Across Bones. We lie still in the void between then and now. My grandmother, mother, and I, like bound pages in a book, back to front, arms about waists tucked in decades, 100 years or more. But when, on moonless nights, I start to cry, my grandmother reaches far across my mother's bones, gathers my tears. It's all right. It will pass, she says. These things happen, have happened before, and will again. I inhale her breath and her mother's breath, vapors of 10,000 years and years before that. When today becomes yesterday and days before that, she knows I will stretch across my daughter's bones, touch my granddaughter's cheek, say what she has said. We lie still in the space as one by one my grandmother puts back my tears into my eyes.
Did you know your grandmother?
I did.
Yeah.
I knew both my grandmothers. When I think of this, I think of my mother's mother, to whom I was closer because she lived longer. She was dead set against me going to the U.S.
Really? Why is that?
Oh, you know.
She was going to miss you. That's why.
Yes. And she said, why do you want to go so far? Nobody had gone, you know, in my generation. And my dad had gone in his, and that was it. So no one had been abroad. So she said, why do you want to go? Why don't you stay here? How much do you want to study? Why don't you get married and stay here? And I would say, no, I have to go. I just have to go.
You know, I'm sure she missed you, but she must have been just overwhelmingly proud too, right?
She was. She died about 3 months before I left, but she knew I was leaving. So, yeah.
She knew where you were headed.
She knew where I was headed. Hmm. She did.
So many great poems about your mother, your grandmother, your siblings in this book titled Her Skin Philothin from poet Lalita Narona. I should say it's available on the web at finishinglinepress.com and also at Lalita Narona's website, lalitanarona.wordpress.com. And before I say goodbye to you, Lalita, I thought I'd let you send us off with one more poem. There's a beautiful finality, I think, to this poem I'm going to suggest, Beyond the Cenozoic Era. We'll let you leave us with these parting words, if you'd be so kind. And by the way, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Aaron. I absolutely have had such a good time. I'm honored to be on your show.
Our pleasure.
Beyond the Cenozoic Era. Eons from now, we'll be found. Fossils in sedimentary rock, wrapped like Egyptian mummies in a tinge of grief. Some higher species will think we are extinct like the dinosaurs. Evolved pundits of paleontology and archaeology will collaborate, carbon date our remains, sequence our DNA, hypothesize about our species, our humanity. But we will still be there, in the sweetness of nothing, as we were before, as we are now, no further than is the first crocus from spring, the first kiss from love, the last breath from death.
You're listening to The Signal, an original production of Your Public Radio in Baltimore.